Well, we learned this week that pop star Demi Lovato was rushed to the hospital following an apparent overdose. Frightening to hear about someone who would appear to have it all, beauty, fame, fortune, but it is certainly a reminder that addiction doesn't discriminate. Lovato has been very open about her struggles with addiction. Joining us now to talk more about the issue is Harry Nelson, chairman of the Behavioral Health Association of Providers and the author of an upcoming book on the opioid crisis. Harry, so what do you think makes a person go back to using after being clean and aware that they have a problem?
I think it's different for different people, but for a lot of people, there are certain triggers that led to the use in the first place, things like anxiety, depression, stress. Those things become triggers in the future. And so I think what ends up happening is that the farther you get from the addiction, people still hold on to a craving for the relief. And opioids are such a powerful source of relief. They go to such a core part of our brain and our nervous system to give us, to make us feel better, to take away the pain, that it's very easy for those same triggers that originally led to it to come back and lead to relapse.
Use it to sort of cover up pain, to cover up depression, and then it ends up being highly addictive?
Yeah, the problem is the power of like opioids is that they essentially trick our bodies and our brains with like chemical structures that mimic endorphins and dopamine, the same things that make us feel good, that hit our pleasure centers, our reward centers, and reduce our pain. And the problem is that once you've identified yourself or you know, an addiction has led you to realize that you're somebody who is particularly vulnerable to this, it's a chronic condition and there's always the risk of allowing a trigger to take you back to that place.
At first we heard that she had a potential heroin overdose. Now we're not really sure. They're not really saying whether it was heroin or amphetamines, opioids. But either way, obviously it could be deadly. It can be deadly. What kind of condition would someone be in when they're discovered to have an overdose? Would they just be unconscious? Or how would you know that someone's suffering from an overdose as opposed to, say, a heart attack or something?
By the way, heroin is an opioid. Heroin's like become a huge part. Heroin and fentanyl are like the driving forces of the opioid crisis besides prescription medicine. But so part of it is like the way that we are built as human beings is when we feel better, when we feel less pain, when we feel calmer and happier, our breathing slows. And so what these medications do is they slow our breathing, they regulate our breathing and essentially depress our respiratory system. And so the problem is that, you know, when you naturally get those high feelings from like exercise, it's limited. But these drugs, whether it's heroin or some other drug, it goes too far. And the real problem is that if you're somebody who used in the past, when you were using it, you typically build up a tolerance because you're using the drug repeatedly. The effect dulls over time, and so you need to raise the dose. So when you have an addiction, very commonly you keep taking a higher and higher dose. And the problem is that when you've overcome the addiction and you stop taking, your body kind of restarts. And if you go back and use a dose that you would have been able to survive when you had built up a tolerance, it can put you in the hospital or worse, kill you.
And what do they do for someone in that condition?
If you can get somebody when they're still breathing or they just stopped breathing, then the drug that's typically used is called naloxone. It has a bunch of different brand names, but the best known is Narcan. And essentially what Narcan does, it's called an opioid antagonist. It's become the critical like weapon in fighting overdoses. Basically, as soon as you take Narcan, as soon as it hits your bloodstream, it immediately reverses the effect of the opioids and you wake up. And so if you can get it to people before they've stopped breathing, truly a lifesaver.
And that would be great, except that we know a lot of the people that have actually overdosed fatally, it wasn't their first time overdosing. And unfortunately, because these drugs are so addictive, sometimes we end up seeing the same person not be lucky the next time. Do you have any idea what the statistics are on overdoses in the United States?
The last year that we have reliable data for was at least 65,000. A lot of people think that number is too low because we're missing medical examiners. Coroners don't always use standardized data, so it may be much higher. A lot of people expect that when we get the 2017 data, we're going to see death toll for the year of all drug deaths go over 100,000. And so of those drugs, currently about two-thirds are opioid-related. So right now, we're talking about something on the order of 40,000 people died of overdose in 2016. I personally think that when we see the data from 2018, it probably has at least doubled, and we probably had about 75,000 to 85,000 deaths in the United States from opioids this year.
Wow, that's astonishing. Those are some frightening numbers for sure. So what's the best approach for loved ones who want to be supportive, not seem judgmental, but actually be helpful and supportive?
Just to be aware of the risk and to look for signs that somebody is engaged in at-risk behavior, and then think about prevention and intervention. Key is to start conversations early, to not be afraid to talk, whether we're talking to our children, our loved ones, our friends, our coworkers, to not be afraid to talk about it, as you said, to talk about it non-judgmentally, and then to encourage people to get help, to let people know that there are resources, to express concern, remain engaged, and if the person will let you, to intervene and to help get them to a doctor and get referrals to treatment.
All right. Harry Nelson, chair of the Behavioral Health Association of Providers. Thanks for being with us.